And we have now come to the third and final paper for today. You can immediately see from the title of the paper that we are in kind of the intellectual space that Ochoa has outlined. The key question is, does technology substitute for nurses? At first glance, this is going to be relatively intriguing, right? Nursing work is pretty close to the epitome of a job that shouldn't get substituted by technology, because it is, after all, a very complex job. It's very dependent on contextual cues and adaptation, and it's very much about the provision of human care. The warm touch, you would think, is not something that machines will provide particularly well in the foreseeable future. But that is just the surface impression, and that's why we should, as Ochoa suggests, emphatically not look at whether jobs are substituted, but whether tasks are. Will nursing as a profession be automated? Probably not. Will certain tasks that nurses perform in their jobs be automated? As the paper is going to show, that's clearly a yes. And so the question is how this automation will affect employment, right? Will task automation reduce the need for nurses? Or will it increase the value of non-automatable tasks so much that it actually increases the need for nurses? As it's going to turn out, that is going to depend on how the opportunities that automation affords are discovered and made use of, and that is going to differ across organizations, depending essentially on the strategies that they pursue. Okay, but let's dive into that, right? It's going to be about American nursing homes, and we'll start by clarifying that context a little bit, and we'll talk about what it is that gets automated, because clearly it's not all of nursing work. The automation in question is about a particular piece of technology called the Computerized Provider Order Entry, also abbreviated CPOE. This is software that gets used for managing medication orders, and it tends to replace verbal and handwritten medicine orders and records with digital ones, right? So that's a pretty limited part of what nurses do. But it's a demanding part and one that's clearly important to get right, right? Medication error is not a trivial issue. Elderly nursing home residents get lots of different forms of medicine, sometimes in strong doses. So messing up can be a pretty serious thing, right? So it's important to get right. And to understand why this automation happens, you should understand something about the nature of nursing work. Right. Nurses do an incredible amount of different forms of work and not just the patient care that we tend to think about. Right. They also do lots of medical handling, lots of admin, lots of logistics, all kind of things that make a hospital, or in this case, a nursing home, really function. Right. A surprisingly small, you could even say like dishearteningly small part of their work is the patient care that we tend to associate with nursing work. Right. Lou and her colleagues are going to quote studies suggesting that less than half, sometimes only a fifth, of the work that they do gets spent on that care-intensive part, right? Lots of what they can do can be frustratingly menial, right? Looking for things is a surprisingly large part of what gets done on their shift, you know, just finding stuff left by other shifts, right? So if we think about tasks, not jobs, you can see why a large share of their work is actually amenable to automation. Right. Patient care is not, or not necessarily, amenable to it, but lots of other parts are, right? So lots of typing could be done through voice recognition. Computers could ease paperwork in all kinds of ways. Automated medicine dispensing could reduce manual handling, etc. So it's like construction in that sense, right? You can clearly not automate all of it, but you can... But you can change the relative weight of different tasks in the job, right? You can change the job, but you can't replace it completely. But the employment effect is sort of uncertain, right? You should also understand something about staffing in nursing homes in this particular context. In the particular context that Lou and her colleagues are studying, there's going to be a huge difference between homes in their nurse-to-resident ratios, right? More nurses is a pretty good, but obviously not a perfect proxy for quality of the nursing home, right? So you can have lots of bad nurses doing a worse job than few good ones, but generally it's pretty reasonable to think that having more nurses is going to be better, right? Having a better norm is going to allow you to provide higher level of service. You can also kind of imagine that good nurses would generally want to work in a place with higher nurse-to-patient ratios because all things being equal, it'll be less stressful, it'll be more pleasant. And assuming that nurses enjoy the human care part of their job, they should give a little more freedom to do that part, all things being equal, which they aren't. And because nursing homes are private, they differ pretty wildly in the quality that they offer because they can charge very different prices. Right? Some wealthy folks will pay exorbitantly to live out their retirement pleasantly. Less affluent people don't have that luxury and have to take what they can afford, right? Or what the state will pay. As Lou and her colleagues put it, the dispersion of licensed nurse, the dispersion of hours, and they're talking about licensed nurse hours per resident, between the first percentile and the 99th percentile is 4.95, suggesting that nursing homes offer services at different quality levels and target different consumer segments, right? That last part is really important, right? There's going to be a very palpable difference in consumer segments targeted by different nursing homes, and a clear sense that there's a low-end market and a high-end market, right? That's what meant by the term they use in the paper called vertical differentiation. That basically means that products differ substantially in their quality and cost, right? You can think of Rolls-Royce versus Daihatsu. Those are vertically very different. Horizontal differentiation, by contrast, is about products being essentially the same quality and same cost and occupying the same level of the market, but differing in small ways. You could think, as an example of that, of Audi versus BMW or Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, right? Vertical differentiation is about targeting different customer segments. That's going to be a big part of the explanation that they offer for how technology substitutes for nurses. What they are going to argue is that technology actually makes both substitution and complementarity possible, right? You can think about quality as being determined, simplistically put, by the nurse-to-patient ratio and by the level of automation, right? More nurses per patient is going to be better, and more automation means that nurses, all things considered, no things considered, holding other things constant and assuming that technology works, right? Assuming that technology works, more automation means that workers or that nurses get to spend more of their time with patients, which is also better, right? So you have two things that are both what we would call monotonically increasing. An increase in ratios of nurses to patients and an increase in automation will lead to better quality. As you can kind of sense, it's a pretty big question mark. For me at least, when automation is going to let nurses spend more time with patients. The totally opposite seems to be true in the Danish adoption of the software system known as Sundhedsplatformen. But let's assume that the authors are right, that this is monotonically increasing. So back on track, right? The interesting question is what happens when you reduce the ratio of nurses to patients and increase automation, or in a sort of imagined counterexample, when you increase the ratio of nurses to patients and reduce automation, or when you just hold one constant and change the other, right? When will the quality improvements that automation brings dominate the quality reduction that reduced staffing ratios will bring? And what is, in a general sense, kind of the optimal staffing level in the presence of automation? So Lou and her colleagues are going to mathematize the living daylights out of that question and introduce a bunch of assumptions to make this work. I am, as you might expect, a little bit skeptical of taking this totally seriously, right? I even question the idea that technology monotonically improves quality, but still, right? Let's entertain the model for the clarity it can bring to the discussion. If you're thus inclined, you can feel free to mess around with the math. But be very cognizant that this clarity, for all its seductiveness, is not always a good way to think about complex social phenomena like the quality of care in a nursing home. What that mathematizing does, however, is that it generates a pretty interesting set of hypotheses, right? Because they include the possibility that firms will change their strategies in response to automation, right? They can change their nurse-to-resident ratio and thus improve their quality and thus change their position in the market, which basically is an issue of strategy. Lou and her colleagues get two different hypotheses. So one hypothesis is that an increase in automation leads to a decrease in the nurse-to-resident ratio for a nursing home with a high vertical position, right? And hypothesis two, an increase in automation leads to an increase in the nurse-to-resident ratio for a nursing home with a low vertical position, right? So in other words, for high-end nursing homes, technology is going to let a nurse work more effectively, and that will reduce the need for nurses, because a high-quality home won't find it particularly meaningful to provide better quality, right? It's already at the high end of the market, and climbing higher probably won't make that much sense. If you already target high-paying customers, there may not be that many with a willingness to pay even more. And so you can't really move up in the market if you're already pretty far up. However, for low-end homes, changing their quality allows them to compete for more attractive and higher-paying customer segments, because automation makes each nurse able to provide more of the valuable patient care, because he or she doesn't need to do non-valuable admin, hiring an extra nurse is going to be very meaningful. Right? So those are kind of the hypotheses that they get. And then the authors basically throw a sample of more than 2,000 nursing homes observed over a 7-year period at their model. Those homes are drawn from all U.S. states, so there's going to be quite a lot of variation between them that we don't really see in terms of rules around, say, minimum staffing levels. They run the sample through what's called an econometric analysis, which for all intents and purposes seems really fair, but also has lots of what Andrew Gellman and Eric Loken call forking paths, which means basically that there are decision points through that analysis that even if you're not looking to produce the result that you end up with, you could kind of end up just taking paths that lead you towards that result where other paths would maybe have taken you away from it, right? The answer to that is to increasingly pre-register your statistical analyses for all kinds of reasons. That doesn't get done. We can talk more about that in class. What they do, though, is that they run a whole series of robustness checks. None of them seem to disqualify their argument in any major way. So what do they find? Well, on average, there's no real effect of automation on staffing levels, right? So on the surface, technology doesn't really substitute for nurses, right? There's nothing happening there. But beneath that apparent average, there's a lot of heterogeneity lurking, as the authors were kind of hypothesizing. And as they put it, I'm going to quote now. In general, the results in Table 4 support our hypotheses that low-end nursing homes increase their staff, while high-end ones decrease their staff after the implementation of CPOE. As a strategic provider, low-end nursing homes adopting new technologies may invest more in nurses to increase their competitiveness in the local market, while high-end ones may have incentives to cut staffing in order to contain costs. End quote. And this means, I'm quoting again, the complementarity effects dominates the substitution effect in low-end nursing homes. And by contrast, the substitution effect dominates the complementarity effect in high-end nursing homes. End of quote. As they put it in the conclusion, I'm quoting again, this much richer story demonstrates the importance of using the right microscope to dissect the data. In particular, our research suggests that an organization's vertical position is potentially important when studying the implications of IT for labor decisions. We're going to return to that point. But consider for the moment that technology adoption leads to a less polarized market offering because it leads low-end providers to improve their quality while high-end providers remain at a constant level. That means it basically makes competition for the lucrative segments of the market more intense. But it also makes serving the low end of the market less interesting and risks creating services that are not accessible to less affluent consumers. So that essentially is gentrification of the product market at work. Anyway, let's get back to this richer story that Lou and her colleagues talk about. They treat this observation that there can be heterogeneity lurking behind an average effect as having methodological implications, right? You need the right microscope to make sense of the data and to pick up on what technology actually does, right? You can't just look at the aggregate effect and say that a technology complements or substitutes, because in reality, that effect might be neutral. That aggregate won't tell you very much about what's going on in the world, and so you need to dig deeper and take a more micro-level data into account, and that'll help you identify effects and different effects much better, much like how Bessin was able to tell a richer story about effects over time by looking at more fine-grained data. The methodological implication, though, is the most interesting one, to me at least. It's not so much a story about technology's effects being contingent on quality levels or generally staffing decisions. Rather, it's a story about how the same technology can have different affordances, offering up different opportunities for what people might conceivably do with it. Where one organization might see a technology as a way to increase efficiency, another might see it as a way to more as a path to more flexibility, or as an opportunity to expand offerings or to pursue entirely new markets. Technologies, in that sense, are not particularly deterministic, and they're not static. Rather, they are things that can be used for many purposes. And those purposes can change over time. And that will shape how technology impacts employment and how the gains from technology are shared. It might feel a little bit like an overreach to say that the effects of CPOE in this case depend on opportunity recognition, in Shane's sense of the word. But if we think about technologies more generally, then it certainly does make sense to think about heterogeneous effects of technology on employment and wages, depending on how a technology is put to use rather than what a technology is. That's all for today. Hopefully what you take away is a deeper understanding of how technology can shape the future of work and the way that innovation can have different consequences. Yes, technology will destroy jobs. That, in some respects, is the whole point. As a society and as a humanity, we are richer today than ever before because we are more capital intensive, because that makes each of us able to do more. We have more and better tools to work with, and that is why we are productive. But jobs are not the static thing, right? The task that makes up a job changes because technology complements the non-automatable parts of our work. And when we become more efficient, prices get pushed down, resources are freed up to engage in new forms of work. That, if you will, is kind of the Schumpeterian wonder. However, this is not change that just happens, leaving everyone richer. Technological change depends on people doing something particular with the technology. There are opportunities in technology, but which of those opportunities get exploited, how and for what purposes, depend on human choice, often choices that happen within organizational contexts. Also, technological change can be really protracted and can create long periods in which only a small share of people get richer and leave everyone else behind. Creative destruction, in that sense, is not just about the destruction of incumbent businesses by new entrants, but also destruction and destabilization of social structures. We live, as I've kind of said a few times, in interesting times, and perhaps too interesting. I look forward to discussing this with you in class. Enjoy your further preparations, and see you soon.